Thursday, June 24th edition of the Subcommittee for Natural Resources, Waterways, and Needs. Today we are hearing House Bill 3107 relating to heating oil tanks. And Mr. Rocco will be presenting a brief overview, and then we'll listen to some amendments. We'll hear some public testimony, and with good speed, we should be in work session. So, Mr. Rocco, do you have some preliminary for the good of the order?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, yesterday we talked a bit about House Bill 3107 in conjunction with the other bills that the committee will be dealing with next week, House Bill 2183, the petroleum road fee, and House Bill 2186, which is the underground storage tank fee bill. This House Bill 3107 directs DEQ to develop a program to regulate the decommissioning of home heating oil tanks, including a procedure to license persons able to provide these heating tank services as contractors. The contractors basically will certify the work, and then DEQ would audit the contractors to make sure there's compliance with the environmental regulations. The bill requires the pump out on these tanks, and it has a fiscal impact. I provided the committee with a fiscal impact and a staff measure summary from the House Committee on Commerce, where the bill was heard and referred to Ways and Means earlier this session. If you'll note, the fiscal impact is approximately $553,000. Total. The bill estimates about $240,000 generated through fees, license fees, from the contractors that will be doing the bulk of the work. The difference between those, the two amounts, is about $313,000, and in the amendments, when we get to those, you'll see that we've included, we've reduced the fiscal impact by $13,804 to a total of $540,000. And there's language in the amendments that would appropriate $300,000 in general fund for the program and give DEQ $240,000 of other funds limitation. Enough to support for FTE in the program.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. Let's go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3107, and we have two witnesses that have signed up, Brian Bowe and Mr. Mike Portman. I'd like to ask both to come forward and morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Who shall go first?
Yes.
Pointing at each other. Mr. Kortenhoff.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Kortenhoff. I'm the manager of the Underground Storage Tank Program, Department of Environmental Quality. This morning, regarding House Bill 3107, I wanted to limit my remarks simply to the fact that we're here to support the bill. Ken Rocco just summarized all the key facts that we would say about it. It is a consensus bill developed to solve a common and growing problem for heating oil tanks that we believe will address a significant environmental problem and adequately protect homeowners. With that, I'll conclude my remarks, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Committee members, shall we hear from Mr. Bowe and then go to questions?
It does it short, even without a rope.
Yeah, but maybe it's just that rope of memory that's got Mr. Chair,
we try to be responsive.
Yeah.
You have said the responsive word. I'm going back to the rope.
Mr. Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Bowe, and I'm here this morning representing the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association. We are also in support of House Bill 3107. As Mike referenced, it's an important piece in a number of pieces that we've worked on this session in trying to deal with heating oil tanks, and we think it's a good bill. It has a good impact. It's going to help expedite the cleanup process for the homeowners. It really helps address one of the problems that we've had in this regard, in that the vast majority, upwards of 95% of these cleanups, happen when somebody goes to sell their house. And what happens is they find out what they've got to do with what the buyer is demanding that they do with their heating oil tank investigation and cleanup. And then all of a sudden, they get thrown into a two, sometimes 3 or 4 month process. And in the worst case scenarios, it has caused some people to lose their real estate deals, and people have to find a dwelling and then move on to some other house. So we think this is going to help remedy that. That's one piece of the puzzle. Senate Bill 542 is on the governor's desk. That's the other piece of the puzzle. And we think it's a good bill. Urgent passage.
Questions from the committee?
How many... you're really intense around here for home-heating and buildings. How many are leaking, and how's the business going? Are we still putting in new ones, or that stuff?
Well, Mike, I think Mike can give you the direct numbers. There's, I think, about 60,000 active tanks and somewhere around 150,000 tanks that have been what we refer to as abandoned, that people have changed energy source. New placement oil heat systems are very rare, Mr. Chair, Representative King. Some people do choose to stay with oil heat and replace their tanks with new improved tanks. But that's basically the state. It's a declining industry. It is.
Mr. Chair, Representative King?
I'm wondering... how many years it would take, with this kind of budget number, to clean up, that inventory of underground tanks out there, of which a certain number, have fuel left in them, would see it for a longer time. Are we going to take care of it this 2 years, or is this something we're going to be dealing with for 5 biennium?
Mr. Kortenhoff, I think can speak to that issue, but I think there's over 100,000 tanks that we're talking about.
Oh, he said 150,000. I'm wondering how far they think they're going to get.
So let's see. At the rate of 1,000 a year, let me think about that.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might take a stab at that, it is a long-term problem, but there's a couple things to bear in mind. As Mr. Kortenhoff has said in previous testimony, these are low environmental priorities, and it's only a rare case that a heating oil tank poses anything beyond a low environmental hazard. Secondly, as properties turn over, these tanks are being remediated as a condition of the sale. So it's kind of a long-term process, but it's hard to motivate someone to address it until they sell their house. There's really no pressing need to, if you've got a tank right in the backyard, to deal with it until you sell the house and there are funds available from the transaction to deal with it. Otherwise, you're just buying yourself a problem.
Aunt Fanny falls to the... The fact of the matter is that...
Aunt Fanny?
Remediation, in some cases, unless there's some groundwater threat, a direct threat, or the leakage goes off the property so that there's a threat to the property next door, sometimes these leaking tanks end up being discovered years after the fact of a leak, and the testing of the soil shows that bacteriological breakdown and other natural remediation takes place, and there's really nothing to do but fill in the hole. So it's a fairly low order of environmental.
I have an understanding of that, that there is a certain circumstance where you might have a number in a neighborhood where the impact could be a little higher. I'm trying to get a handle on to what degree we're spending $300,000 a year for how long, and to how much public purpose we have versus saving people's real estate deals, which of course we want to help facilitate, but it's state money versus what private owners have done. Like, we don't want to deal with the problem. I also want to see gee, if we're setting up new ones, are we spending money on the back end and not having the prices built into the front end so we can continue the problem that I was trying to get a handle on?
Yeah, let me understand the question about state money. The oil heat industry is paying for this program with assessments to oil.
My understanding is we're $300,000 short, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I'm representing this
this current biennium was approximately $300,000 short, and it's primarily due to the phasing in of the fees. The fees won't be collected for the full biennium. Next biennium, if you notice on the fiscal impact, there would be fees more in the order of about $400,000 with costs about $536,000. So the state would need to continue with about half as much next biennium. General fund support then.
Would you looking to drop to about 150,000 or 170,000 or so if there was some?
We sort of hopped over the $3 million being returned to the general fund as well, didn't we?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's a separate but related issue where they, the petroleum load fees that were collected in the early 90s will be returned to the general fund.
So there's a source for these issues, you know, covered that, and this is helping, you know, cover it.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, it's not a direct tie. Those monies will just be deposited in the general fund for whatever purpose the legislature decides.
But there is some justification to say that there has been some user industry pay.
I think so. Okay. Maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but I think they are related. The load fees were assessed and dedicated for a particular purpose. We found out the AG didn't agree with the purpose, so the money goes back to the general fund. Everybody screamed uncomfortably about return to the general fund, but
we're going to
smile and move it. Question or comment?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like a little better handle on what we're dealing with here. One of our reports shows that in the last 10 years, they've reported 5,300 leaking tanks and 1,100 in 1998 alone. I guess I'm wondering, you know, two questions. Number one, how are those reported? Is that a hard figure? Is that an assumption that's made, extrapolation or something? The other thing is, when we talk about the thousands of tanks that are out there, how many of them are in use? How many of them have been pumped? How many of them have been upgraded to a fiberglass or fiberglass flush or some kind of treated tank that really doesn't pose a danger in the future? And I just don't have a good sense of how.
Mr. Kurtenhoff can back a truckload of numbers and figures up to your office and offload them. He's been living and breathing this for the biennium. I've sort of been watching the information stream as it goes by, but there's chapter and verse available if you want the information.
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, I can very briefly summarize an answer. The number of reported leaks, over 1,000 leaks last year, is a very firm number. That is specific and tracked reports to the department as is required under the law. That number has been going up significantly every year. It goes up maybe 25-30% per year, and we expect that to continue.
Mr. Chair, if I could break in. How do they find those leaks? Is that soil samples, or is that fuel consumption, the tank is goes empty without running that much fuel? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, the bulk of them are discovered because of real estate transactions by soil sampling, as you described. A small number are discovered because there is a noticeable decline in fuel in the tank, or because the leak has gotten into the basement or seeping on the hillside, whatever. The bulk real estate transaction, which are what is driving this issue.
The question there, Representative Messerly, has become, have you now or have you ever had oil heat? And it's a matter of disclosure on the real estate form. So there is a probing interest in the Department of Fund. People go out and find the tank, learn that it's got partial contents.
And, Mr. Chair, if I might add, that 1,100 number doesn't speak to the severity or lack of severity of the release. And I know this from my own personal experience this last summer buying a house, and we had the tank tested, and there was a leak, and it was remediated, and it was a very small amount of oil that cost $5,000 to dig out. But that's the way the system works, and people need assistance with this, and this bill scares us.
Mr. Chair, one more part to the question, Representative Messerly. The tanks that are in use, the numbers are not firm like the reported number of leaks. It's roughly 200,000 tanks total that are out there, most of them abandoned, and so we know very little about them. We don't know whether they've been pumped out or not. Most have not. The average abandoned tank has over 100 gallons of oil in it and represents an ongoing leak. There are perhaps 60,000 active tanks still in use. As Mr. Bowe indicated, there is a small number of tanks being put in. There are very few that have any significant leak prevention capabilities like we require for gasoline tanks. But the numbers are so small that that are going in now that no one has considered proposing any specific requirements on tanks that go in as we have for gasoline tanks.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you.
Colleagues, we have before us some amendments to the 3700, and perhaps the best thing we could do is if we finish with public testimony. Any other person here present wishing to offer public testimony to this issue? If not, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing. Seeing no one, public hearing is closed. We have some amendments, the -A2 amendments, Mr. Rocco, did you want to go through those, or did you want to have legal counsel present those to the committee?
Mr. Chair, I think counsel is prepared to describe the changes and how these amendments connect to Senate Bill 542. I would just like to point out Section 12 and 13 reflect the, on page 1 of the amendments, reflect the other funds limitations of $240,000 and $300,000 of general fund appropriation to carry out this program. And it's also associated with four positions, four FTE, that you'll see on the fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Otto. Ms. Holman, excuse me, does the committee have any questions for Mr. Otto on the sections 12 and 13? Holman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Jeanette Holman from Legislative Council. These amendments are fairly technical amendments, and so rather than go through them line by line, I'm just going to tell you what they do, and if you have questions, I can answer them. They add an emergency clause because we're putting in financial the appropriation and expenditure limitations. Between Senate Bill 542 and House Bill 3107, there were some duplicative provisions. These amendments address those, picking up the provisions in Senate Bill 542, which were a little bit broader than one of the provision that was duplicated in 3107. The other thing they do is they clarify that the Environmental Quality Commission has rulemaking authority over some provisions in Senate Bill 542 that are duplicated in 3107, as well as picking up some definitions by adding them to a series. We pick up definitions that apply in both bills, and they need to be consistent. So that's the primary purpose for these amendments.
So this provides the reconciliation between the bills.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I like that. Questions for Ms. Holman? Seeing that, we're going to go ahead and go into a work session on this bill. House Bill 3107, we are in work session. We need amendments brought into the bill, and then we need to move the bill to the full Ways and Means Committee with the detached recommendation. Much pleasure.
The -A2 amendments to 3107.
Representative King moves the -A2 amendments to House Bill 3107. Are there any objections to the amendments? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. We need a motion now for the full bill to be, as amended, to be moved forward with the detached.
I move House Bill 3107 with the detached recommendation to full Ways and Means.
It's been moved that we put House Bill 3107 as amended to full Ways and Means of the DUCAS. Are there any questions?
I have any comments.
Comments, sir.
I was on the Commerce Committee that dealt with this, and it wasn't clear at the time we voted on this that we were going to be having a $300,000 additional revenue impact. I think that's just process. I think we probably would have done more homework. I think we still would have for the bill, but probably would help them a little bit more. And the fact that the industry has stepped up to the plate and done what they could, and the homeowners who were generated that $3 million, they paid for their share trying to address this issue, and this is, a fair way to.
thinking of something, and I agree with you. I think it's been a history of the industry trying to provide a mechanism for remediation. The original attempt was not perfect. Very few pieces of legislation came out of the building perfectly. At the other end of this process, there is a reposit of some tipping, or not tipping, but load fees, and then that goes to the general fund. This bill will ultimately generate about $400,000 to biennium. Probably what we will do at the end of the biennium is readjust depending on needs and fees, but it gives us a mechanism to do the remediation. Let's go ahead and call the roll if there are no further questions.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Messerly?
Aye.
Representative King?
Aye.
Senator Durst?
Aye.
Senator Messerly?
Aye.
Senator Clifton?
Aye.
Chair Farrelly?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Motion passes. Chair will carry to the Full Ways and Means Committee the due pass recommendation. We need a carrier for the House.
Take my turn.
Representative King will carry.
Representative Morgan's turn, but we'll save her for later, maybe.
Of course, she's not here. That's an
easy. Well, that's what I mean.
Here's the easy.
Perfect. Well, I'll do this one.
Okay, and on the Senate side, we need a carry.
I got to do that.
Senator Messer is here. That concludes the work on House Bill 3107. We need to open our House Bill 3225 public hearing. Let's open the public hearing on House Bill 3225. So ordered. I don't know if anybody signed up for the sign-up sheet, but I know there's testimony that needs to come forward from the public, so I'll invite you to the front table, and if anyone you wish to bring, and we'll launch into it. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jean Fromm, and I'm chair of the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning.
Welcome.
My district is really very excited about sort of our new role and our chance to provide local leadership support and coordination in the water quality and family habitat improvement projects that we have going. We're also in the process of adjusting to changes in sort of what has been the traditional focus in soil and water conservation planning, and the decline in our technical staff support, which we have in the past received from the Natural Resource Conservation Service, which is a federal agency. And just to put some numbers on that, it used to be that the district board had 22 federal employees to call upon to, you know, ask for help and assistance with various conservation planning projects. And we're down to one now. So it seems like in a time when we're being asked to step forward and do more and be active at the local level, some of our traditional supports are being reduced. And my main reason for being here this morning is to speak mainly as a chair of a district and make a plea for stable and adequate long-term funding so that we can do the things that we want to do and we need to do out there on the ground. And just as an example of that, I mean, we were started in the process of doing the Agricultural Water Quality Management Plan under Senate Bill 1010 and had a good budget to hire, you know, the right level of personnel and a bunch of public outreach money in there. And we are now seeing the funds for that kind of work be much reduced, and we're not done. And my concern is that the districts not see asked to do things that they can't also be adequately funded to do. It goes to our credibility. It goes to being able to produce a good plan that has buy-in from the various players. In Marion County, we have 270 different kinds of crops raised out there. We need, if a voluntary sort of approach to agricultural water quality improvement is going to work, we need the public input on the front end when we're developing these plans. And I'm real concerned to see some of these changes in the budget for these projects get changed in midstream. this is going to be a long process, this work that we're engaged in. And one of the things that the district needs in order to be effective in is to know that our funding is stable, that we're going to be able to bring in the people and train them up in the local issues, help them build the relationships with the farmers, with the watershed councils, and know that, you know, that we're going to have the funding to keep them around biennium to biennium. I mean, the kinds of things we're trying to do on the ground out there aren't going to be fixed in 2 years or 4 years or six. So it would really make my job as chair, which I'm sure you all know is voluntary, you know, much easier. It's a difficult job, but having, you know, stable and secure and a long-term commitment to the funding is going to make it a lot easier for the board to do the good job that we want to do. And that's essentially what I wanted to say this morning.
Chris, as Senator Church.
What type of operations on stream restoration require a kind of long-term action?
It's a watershed sort of thing. So stream restoration encompasses the whole watershed. There are things that you can do, you know, along the channel and along the banks that are effective, but really, I mean, it's like turning a boat in some ways. It's like turning a big boat. There, everything that happens in the watershed eventually ends up in the channel. And, you know, the process of education and, you know, and fixes in places that are effective is going to take time. It takes time to identify what the problems are in a watershed, and they're unique. Every watershed's a little different because of the different soil types, the different types of land uses in there, and the condition of the watershed. You need to identify what are the problems, figure out where you can focus your efforts to actually make a difference, and then get them on the ground and then monitor them, see how they're working, see what's effective, what's not. And that doesn't happen quickly.
Mr. Metro.
I'm interested in the 10-10 plan that you're working on in this town. The coordinator that's provided by the Department of Agriculture, how big an area does that individual cover?
He's working in the Malala and the Pudding River and also what we call the French Prairie area, which is the east bank of Marion County along the Willamette River from about Kaiser north. So it's a large area. Variety
of crops. And how is that progressing? When do you expect to see that plan completed?
We expect to have a draft of that plan done in about December, assuming that the funding that we had in place, you know, is well, assuming that we get similar funding to the to what we had. If we don't get adequate funding, it's going to take longer to complete it. We were really working quite hard on getting a lot of public involvement and trying to do some outreach, you know, on our plan. And so we had put a lot of effort and time into bringing the different players onto the local advisory committee, doing some tours and meetings around the area, and are just in the basically the stages of writing the draft plan.
And how much staff do you have in your office?
At present, we have two watershed technical specialists. They are shared between our district and Clackamas. I have a coordinator position, which is funded through Marion County, and the Water Quality Management Plan for Malala and Pudding, and access to one NRCS person and several others in the basin. I think there's eight or so in our part of the basin.
And how much does your county contribute to your office?
They provide $33,000 for wages and benefits and some supplies.
Which is good compared to a lot of other counties. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Further questions? Russ Lincoln.
Pretty River, one of your
yes, it is.
Waters. And that has some unique problems. That got an EPA problem attached to that.
Correct.
I just briefly comment on that.
Well, the Pudding River is on the 303D list, and it has had some pesticides show up in the sediments and other water quality problems. And that sort of touches on the other thing that the district is trying to do, is we're trying to coordinate with all these watershed councils that are getting formed, and we have the Pudding River, Flivy Creek, Pringle, Mill Creek is forming, the North Dan, and so we would like to, you know, provide a sort of coordinating role, and it's another example of how our staff is being spread thinner and thinner, you know, as we try and accomplish all these different things.
All right, Paul, so did you say your 12 districts is looking to provide a coordinating role for large city councils within your territory, is that?
Yes. We have supported them in formation by providing people to take notes at their meetings as they form and do their mailings for them. And that can be a pretty long-term commitment, too, depending on how quickly the district forms. And then as these different large districts get up and running, we see ourselves as maybe, you know, providing sort of a coordinating, supportive type of role so that we're all talking to one another and communicating and working effectively on the common issues that we face.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you provide financial services for the regional councils? Do the funds and the grants run through your district?
Sometimes, yes. And that's kind of their choice. As they get more established, then they seek their own financial identity. But at this point, we are acting as a fiscal agent for two of them on grants. And we would like to help provide grant writing assistance and have those grants come through and be channeled through our office. Anything we can do to help.
How many, maybe you said this, and I missed it, how many watershed councils do you have within your Southern Water District?
The Pudding is forming. Clivet Creek and Pringle Creek have formed. San Ann, the North San Ann has formed. The Mill Creek watershed is in the process of forming. So that's five.
And do they all have their own coordinators?
No, they do not. The only one that does at this time is the North San Ann.
Sure. And thank you for bringing your testimony today to the committee. It's very much like testimony that we've heard in the standing committee from other watershed councils and watershed coordinators and solar conservation districts.
I think the message is clear that in order to get the job done, we do need to be able to provide some assurance that there's going to be a long-term commitment to this process. And I think the mechanism that
Measure 66 provides by refocusing the lottery dollars and putting this issue into the Oregon Constitution makes at least a better assurance that we're going to stick with this process. So thanks again for the question. Any other person here present that wishes to have the testimony on House Bill 3225? If not, we're in adjournment. Thank you very much.
Anybody?
Dan, did you want to make some testimony?
We're going to adjourn after this?
Yes. Yeah.
You don't need me then.
Oh, with you, sir. Every word on this committee.
I'm Jeremy from Oregon.
There's a lot of sound and silence for about the first half hour of this committee this morning.
Well noted, Senator Corcoran.
I'm Jan Lee with Oregon Water Resources Congress, but I wanted to speak today from my role as Vice President of the Marion County Watershed, Marion County Water Management Council, which is like a water planning council instead of a planning commission, so that one of our roles is to take water policy issues and formulate ordinances, et cetera, to pass on to the commission and then on to the county commissioners. And I've recently talked to our water staff there. We've got two full-time water staff, and what we're going to do is to work with the Soil and Water District and all the watershed councils in providing our additional county staff to them as well. So we've just embarked on that project. There's actually seven different watershed council groups that are trying to work in the basement now, and more interest, so we are feeling that it's starting to get away unless the county takes more role in that. And I think as we continue to grow the watershed councils, that this county kind of coordinating organization will be critical, and it may be a way to help move some of the money through the process so that the watershed councils, where there aren't soil and water districts who play that role with them, would have other opportunities. So I just wanted to bring that idea to the table.
I think the coordination aspect is one that's becoming clear to people.
think we have 85 watershed councils now in Oregon, up from 40.
That's your turn, no?
92?
Yeah.
Check what's the spot, huh? The curve is going up. Senator Church?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just discussing with the Senator that I write here about an issue of how quickly trees can be planted and their actions are established. One of the problems, could you say this for a second? I want to ask a question. Okay, thanks. One of the problems that I've seen happen over the last 20 years or so is we put so many restrictions on anything near that stream that every farmer rancher is paranoid about doing anything proactive to try to reestablish vegetation. What I'm hoping you folks can do, because I'm telling you, we could replant all these streams in no time at all, activate nurseries to get this stock out there, get the farmers and these local groups together to plant it. But everybody is so nervous, and what I see us doing is we're going to spend all the money on working the regulations that we've placed on doing anything proactively along those streams. What I'm going to ask them to do right now, and this is something they may need to bring back to us, we need to find some way in which we can say, in this watershed, the Chehalem and the tributaries, that this is acceptable practice, mail that out to every cooperator, every property owner, and say, these plants are available, this is how you would do it, that sort of thing. Has anyone done anything like that?
Senator George, not that I'm aware of. I think that would be an excellent idea, and if we could get that information to all of the folks. There is an email network that watershed councils have and operate within. Soil and Water Districts have an association, and the counties who work with these groups, if they had that information, could also disseminate it to some point.
Actually, one of the charges of the OWEB is to create a model watershed restoration template. So I think that's exactly the kind of thing, the kind of tool that's been identified as being needed, Senator. So I think you're right on the money.
Let me give you an example. We have a little green that comes down. Actually, the farmer Doug Green many years ago. things have happened to it, you know, over the years, and all of a sudden, a group of us met about a year ago, and we're talking about, wouldn't it be nice if we could do this? And we're talking in tree planting. None of the old timers can ever remember the lady salmon there, but everybody said, well, why not try it, and, you know, to establish some sort of run. And so I had my wife contact Soil Conservation, and they said, well, hey, we have this special willow tree that's available. And so they ran us out a little packet of those things. And what I thought was really interesting, and that's what I just mentioned to the good senator, is the fact that within 1 week, we had planted all of those trees, and had planted about 10 or 12,000 pines without cost to the government here, other than that little bunch of those willow trees, on some highly erodible ground. And so it didn't take much to activate, and I don't think I'm different than anyone else out there as far as responding to what we
think. There's tremendous potential, especially when you activate the volunteers and leverage a little of the cost. It is potentially
incredibly beneficial. Any further questions for if there's any other person that wishes to testify, come forward and give your name for the record. Question or representative?
And I know you, I want to ask you another question. I know you put a lot of time working on for a lot of years, but especially this session. I'm concerned about the coordination. As we get to 92 watershed associations, and there's a lot of different approaches to what we're trying to do out there, but we've also got a pile of money right now that we're trying to administer and be accountable for. Although we want these local groups to be able to operate independently and have their own identity, it seems to me that we've got to start pulling this thing together if we're going to be efficient. And I know that in some areas, the Soil and Water Districts, sounds like in Marion County, they're doing a tremendous job. In other areas, it isn't working quite so well. And then you're working around the state, and you have a group that was formed here during this session. Do you have any ideas that not only, I think we all know, maybe have a pretty good idea what should be done, but how we're going to get there? To where we don't really offend some people that are doing a great job out there.
Right. Yes, it's hard, Representative McNeely, Mr. Chair, to try to reorganize things without destroying some of the incentive and motivation that's going on. But as we worked the session, I realized in our own county we weren't doing as good a job as we could because the Water Management Council has been working on its plan and not coordinating. So we got the staff to try to put it together in a different way. but I think the idea that was in House Bill 3225 about having an assessment plan and action plan is a better approach, because people can work on those as a unit, and there needs to be some kind of centralized clearinghouse regionally for that work to be done more efficiently. I think the idea that Marion County has put together works fairly well, and I've seen the Clackamas model working with friends up in that basin. That works fairly well. I was on the Soil and Water Conservation District over in the Deschutes for a number of years, and that one was not as well organized as some are over here. There's a lot that needs to be done. But the coordination, I think, is going to be the big problem, because if we get money, we need to orient it towards the plans and not the entities. The entities have to somehow come into that group plan.
And that is, I think, one of the things that I don't have as much concern about the rapid growth and proliferation of watershed councils. I think they'll have to go through that curve, and that at some point in time people will realize this isn't an employment project. This isn't a project that's primarily generating jobs. This is a project that we need to focus on the planning, the implementation. And so I think there will be a growth curve and then a consolidation around, you know, that core of watershed expertise that's available to the water conservation districts. And then it's the interplay and the partnership between the soil water conservation districts, some of the federal agencies that provide cost share and advice, Oregon State University Extension, and a whole bunch of other support services. At some point in time, there's got to be consolidation. But I think we will go through that curve of proliferation.
One more brief question. I'm interested in how it's working here in Marion County. Who is the lead agency? Is it the Water Council that you're serving on, sponsored by the county, or is the Soil and Water District the lead agency that seems to be pulling everyone together?
I think up until this time, Representative Mezzoli, Mr. Chair, that the Soil and Water District has had to take on that role without a lot of help. And in talking with the county staff, I think they're now willing to move the council over to working with those groups to try to get more coordination. And so I think that model is going to be fairly effective, because it just brings three more staff people to the table if something else. So everybody can share in the use of those. But in my own personal opinion, I feel that the Nebraska plan that pulls together the conservation districts and the council into a new state agency with federal coordination is by far the best model that I've seen.
Thank you.
Further questions? And we have the other gentleman who was staff at concession.
Another agency. I think there's rules against that.
Another agency?
Don't the Republicans have these internal documents about the
other when we break the spending limit and add
the
contaminate
the agency, and now we've got the water agency. Yeah, and that's the government growth stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm Monty Graham, the water quality planner for the Marion Soil Water Conservation District. Basically, Mr. Chair, Senator George, in the packet that I handed you previously, there was a plan that shows the Willamette Mission State Park, and if you will recall that the Willamette Restoration Initiative, along with several other groups, we planted 13 plots out there of riparian planting that are 13 different plots that will be able to be used for education on riparian planting, from a managed forest, which actually included black walnut, as well as other commercial trees, to willow plantings, to gallery forests. So we have on a public site a place for farmers, landowners, any riparian people that want to go and look, okay, what's it going to look like? What kind of plants do I need to look at? And we were told by State Parks that if we wanted to bring something in there, we wouldn't have to pay the $3. So if you'd like to go look at the plantings, please do.
That's an education. I appreciate that, because that's something I've been advocating for a long time. Why aren't we, since we're telling everybody else what to do, why aren't we getting the areas that belong to the state of Oregon State Park planting? So one of the things that, you know, I think I'd like you to be aware of is that private enterprise, Christmas tree growers, foresters, people who have orchards, filbert growers, cherry growers, we plant millions of trees every year. Millions of trees. This is not rocket science. I mean, you know, we could plant this valley in 1 year if we decided we're going to do it. So what I'm saying is we can do lots of studies and lots of plans and everything else, or we can do what this bill has in it, and that is get the research determined quickly,
set those plot things up like you were describing when you knew what to do and then get it on the ground.
Alex
Sherman,
amen, brother.
I'm a ground sponsor, Mr. Chair.
What's your message?
My colleague to my left here.
I've been watching your colleague all morning.
He's been trying to tell me
this is simple. All we need to do is throw some blackberry seeds in there. But this prompted me to do some things.
I think.
Well, there's at least there has been, unless it's been recently resolved, a conflict between the Corps of Engineers. If you're on a Corps of Engineers project, And I've been directly involved in this in my past life, where we were instructed. Matter of fact, we lost our credibility with their, credibility is the right word, and we were taken off of their list of projects because we did not keep the vegetation, the blackberries, and the trees off the riparian zone. And is this still an issue with Corps of Engineers, or have they finally figured out that they're in direct conflict with the Oregon plan and everything else we're trying to do?
Well, I certainly can't speak for the Corps of Engineers, Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, but I can say that I was the project lead for the Natural Resources Conservation Service for the Emergency Watershed Protection Program that went into what we call the Lower Willamette Basin, which is about here north. We did 95 projects and $11 million federal dollars in 17 months. And we did protect, although we couldn't work on core projects, we did protect core projects. What has happened, though, is the Corps didn't have the dollars to go back to a lot of those. And yes, exactly what you say is true, although it's kind of, because the Corps, we had, I'm trying to think of the one on the Molalla, there was one on the Molalla, one on the Clackamas, and there was three projects that they'd done exactly, they'd kept all the vegetation off to maintain their ability to have the Corps come back in and fix it, and then when the flood of 96 came along and damaged it, the Corps did not come back in and fix it, and because it was a federal project, NRCS could not go in, and therefore several of those did not get any assistance.
Judge, just for the record, in my case, it was not for maintenance. They wanted to keep it clean for inspection, and we argued repeatedly that that vegetation was protecting their levee, which we were maintaining, but they've still insisted that we take all the vegetation off.
Again, I can't speak for the Corps, Mr. Chair, Mr. Messerly, but they feel, and we do the same thing within our dikes. I've done a lot of work in the waste management area where the roots or that type of thing within the dike can cause damage, and they look at it, I believe, in that aspect, and so I believe, I'm kind of recalling here, they've got a 3-inch, it can't be larger than 3 inches in diameter, I think is where they're at now. We've looked at some major plantings at the toe of some of that work, as well as getting your evergreens at the backside of that so we can create the shade that you need on the stream, and so you can work between those two and get some quality to the stream and still maintain that. But the Corps is pretty adamant. I worked with the city of Idana, two dikes up there. They've got a major dike that we put in. It was about a $400,000 project, and they were trying to get the Corps to take over the maintenance. And we actually have left about 4 trees along there because there was no need to take them out, and they were part of it. And the Corps of Engineers refused to accept that dike because of those trees that we left.
Senator Jordan, I hasten to add that this will be the last comment that we have on the public hearing.
In defense of the good representative team, I'd like to tell you a story. We had an area that we were getting ready to plant some silverfin, and we had trouble with any colors showing up in the water that was leaving during the heavy rain. And so we planted some a curtain of dark ferns down along the edge, and we still had a problem. And then we let the blackberries begin to grow there and down along the little drain that headed down to eventually become a stream on someone else's property. The interesting thing was, in the second year, in the heaviest rain, there was no color in the water. And so blackberries is a terrible weed, but when it comes to some of the efforts here that the representative was kidding about, that actually can be effective. We need to determine whether that's acceptable to have that there.
It's true. I mean, I live on the Mohawk River, and that was a major flood area. And, when you have the...
Shall we put in the...
Well, I'm damned there.
Yeah.
But when the floodwaters do hit your property there, it's amazing how much protection those blackbirds can do.
Hold it now, Mr. Chair. Hold it. We just allocated $500,000 for additional weeds of the Himalayan blackberry. That was the one that we were targeting. There's something wrong with this discussion. Look, where are we going here?
Actually, Senator Mister, when Representative Mister started talking about past lives, I think it's getting in trouble.
Well, I thought about Boston, Delaware, in earlier life.
This, no further business before the committee. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3625, thanking the witnesses for their testimony this morning. Thank you very much. And we are in adjournment until Monday morning.
Thank you, sir.